on February 20th of 2005. A well-known eccentric and journalist, Hunter S. Thompson, died. So, I'm going to start off with a song made popular in this day and age, I guess, from the movie Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, based off of the book by Hunter S. Thompson in 1971. It was a Billboard hit in March of 1971, so it's only fitting to start off with that. And then I will go into excerpts from a lecture that Hunter S. Thompson did at Boulder University. So, once again, between the hours of 10 p.m. and 6 a.m., it would be considered mature listening, and the material that we play does not reflect the opinion of the DJs or of WLUW, and we consider it to be artistically relevant and important. Listener discretion is advised.
Doc Thompson, are you still a bigger football fan than President Nixon?
You know, I used to think that was the only time Nixon spoke the truth to me. And from what I've learned since then, I suspect he even lied about that. No, actually, he knew, he gave me a serious crackback the first time I talked to him about football when he knew the name of a second string Oakland flanker who maybe played 7 plays in 1 Super Bowl, never showed up again. Nixon not only knew who he was and what he had done, but he knew where he had gone to college, which I'm not sure what it tells us, except that at least he can tell the truth about one thing. But, I'm a football fan in the sense that, I guess Nixon and I must share one thing, and we have one thing in common. They were serious football fans. I don't know, there's no shame in that, to admit you have one thing in common with Richard Nixon. We both wear belts, We spend American money, so, it was eerie to find out that I could get along with Nixon and actually have a ho-ho conversation with him about football, because I always felt he lied about everything, and that was the one thing he caught me on.
We have a question up in the balcony.
Yes, I was wondering if you could tell us about...
Balcony's big, man, where they are. Stand up or something, right? I can't...
Could you tell us about your latest bout with venereal disease?
No. Fortunately, I can answer that with a clear and Christian heart and bright white eyes. I've not been troubled by venereal disease recently. And so I can't tell you about it. But I warn you against the filthy herpes.
No,
my
real
herpes syndrome that gets on people.
My real question is, could you give me your feelings about disco?
Well, you're a smart son of a bitch.
Yeah. KC and the Sun.
I feel the same way about disco as I do about herpes. All right, what do you got next?
Oh, the hair.
No, it's your turn again. I want to see you walk on that one.
I'm up here in the balcony and I can't hear shit.
Never mind.
Okay.
We have a question in the balcony.
How can you be in the balcony? I'm down here. The dark one.
Hell of a balcony. You're on.
1977, we came down. Given your actions and your attitude, as demonstrated here and reported in the media, I got one question. How do you, to preface it, what I'm talking about primarily is the way you acted when you first met Carter. You were drunk, you were loud, you were all those things.
That was the same way I am now.
Exactly. My question is,
drunk
how do
and
you
loud,
make...
you bastard.
You're being personal, you chump.
Yeah.
What I want to know.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Your people made this, you swine. Go ahead. Drunk and loud, indeed.
Seriously.
Oh, you're right, though. When I first met Carter, I was probably worse than I am.
One question.
Well,
how do you maintain your credibility and your contacts with people like Ted Kennedy, who introduced you to Carter, who was your ticket to Carter? How do you maintain your contacts with those people that you seem to have so much fun putting down? You seem to have so much fun taking apart.
They like me. that's an honest answer. I don't know. That is a fact. Yeah, Carter worries about me. He told people that he thinks I'm a bad advertisement for the human race, and but he thinks I'm salvageable. You know, people all through my life have felt that way. That if I could just be brought to see the light, that I would be different. But they were just dumb. That's all the light, a lot of way I made it. Or else I'm doomed. It doesn't matter. You know, the reality is there. Excuse me. What? Down with the maggots or the sharks. If I ever got to be 50 years old, I'd be so confused, I'd probably have to go into EST or something, Yeah, I'd be, if I, I, to have lived this long has seriously disoriented me. What do I mean by gonzo? It makes people like you ask me questions like that in shock. I don't know. I really don't know. It was a good word that I liked at the time, and it separated me from, say, the New Journalist, or I didn't feel that I was a part of any group or type of journalist. And gonzo was a good word. I could have called myself a sand nigger at the time, you know. That was nothing. Nothing at all. It was just a... Not to me. Well, apparently it means what I do. That's what I gather from people who tried to do it. But it's the same, for the same reason that if I on any masthead, always insist on having my own weird corner, like, you know, national affairs desk or global affairs editor, foreign manager. It's a perversity. Oh, good. There's a certain body of evidence building up here. Words like degeneracy, insanity, madness. I don't think you people were serious.
When Ken Kesey said that he thought the novel was not a good way to communicate, was that just an offhand remark, or did he think there was a better way?
Apparently he thought he was right, because he hasn't written another one since then. And he's obviously capable of doing it, so... Anyway, some people have to take it their... you know, you have to take their word and take it by face value. I think Kesey's one of them.
So does that mean that he's just given up trying to communicate, or that he's trying in a different way?
That's a heavy judgment. I think as long Kesey appears to have worked out a life for himself that, which is many jumps ahead of what I worked out. I'm still being buffeted about by the storms of. I think he's come to some kind of adjustment in his own world that I haven't. So to that extent, he's made progress, and he's probably ahead of me. Just because he's quiet doesn't mean that he wants to talk. A lot of times, it's a lot more fun to be quiet.
Would you like to ask a question in the balcony?
Which one?
You said you like to make life as easy as possible, right. And you also said that for the past 18 or 20 years, you've avoided... going into jail. I was wondering if you could give any of us peons out here a few helpful hints on how to avoid that unfortunate circumstance. You know, one or two things we could jot down on the back of our driver's license or something.
That'd be very dangerous for me to do that. Well, sure as hell, whatever I told you would not work for you the next time you tried to use it. But if you went to jail, you'd blame me.
Can't hurt.
What's that? Get hurt? All right, just in a very quick, I've always assumed there's no such thing as paranoia, that the menace is really worse than what people tell you it is, even your most paranoid friends. And I just never assume that anybody around me is anything but a potential menace. And that goes for a lot of my best friends. And most people I know, you know, my friends who have been busted for that reason, because they just get dumb about what they're doing. And the minute I say that, I'll be busted tomorrow, probably.
Got a three-part question. I'll just ask it, and you can respond in any order you want.
I'm gonna heart attack.
One, how long you been writing under the pen name Robert K. Brown? Two, when did you start Soldier Fortune magazine? K.
Oh,
Brown.
And, a lot of Browns.
The third part is your $50,000 offer for Idi Amin's head on a silver platter still in effect?
That's the kind of thing that get me out of journalism. You know, I could get involved in a project like that. Particularly if we could combine it with journalism. Yeah, I could get paid for a story and also paid for the head. But I say that now, and that... There's one more strike against me when I go into the country. No, I prefer to, for the same money, I'd much prefer to go after Idi Amin's head than I would have to suffer to write another book.
Would you like to ask a question over here?
It's a lot more fun, yes.
I guess it's a lot easier for all of us to stay out of jail if we all have a 300-pound swollen lawyer around us all the time.
Not if he's dead. Which he is.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah.
But I'm wondering,
Sit down.
You mentioned earlier the Great American Slide, and I'm wondering what you meant by that, by America being in a slide, if you could be more specific.
Well, I think this was a nice idea we had in this country and a nice landscape to experiment with. But I think there comes a certain, there comes a time in almost any kind of experimentation or idea, we have to evaluate it, and maybe our time has come. And in the context of just the real world, and not just the American world, but all around, we haven't done too well. We have not been able to sell our. We had a very good advertisement for the idea that we represented.
Well, do you think there's a hope, or are you pessimistic in your in
hope
what you
what?
Say? Do you think there's a hope for us coming out of this slide, or what?
No. I think the damage is done, If you lose one wheel off a car, you might be able to get to the side of the road, and some freaks can make it on two wheels, but if you lose three, man, you're in serious trouble. I think we've lost three.
So
it won't work when you're still rolling.
So we may as well get out snorting as much coke as we can, huh?
I didn't say that.
Well, it'd be a good way to go down.
Well, shit, do you have any coke? You can come up and see me.
All right. You just heard excerpts from a lecture by Hunter S. Thompson at Boulder University in 1977. Before that, there was Brewer and Shipley with One Toke Over the Line. Probably the song most synonymous with the movie Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, based off of the book by Hunter S. Thompson. And if you don't know about Hunter S. Thompson, it's awful difficult to give a synopsis of him, but the best way to put it is when he died, his wishes were to have his remnants in ashes shot out of a cannon. And apparently this was pretty costly, but Johnny Depp, a good friend of his, was happy to oblige. So bear that in mind, I guess, and I don't know, look him up. He was a brilliant and also cartoonish person. This is listener supported community radio, 88.7 WLUW Chicago, broadcasting from the campus of Loyola University.